We're picking up where we left off last week in Mark chapter 9. The last thing that happened in Mark 9 was Jesus exorcising a deaf and dumb spirit from a man's son. Today's passage, which is the very next story, has some interesting parallels with the previous story. When Jesus exorcised the demon, it says the son looked dead. The son looked dead, but then he rose again. Well, today in verse 31, Jesus will prophesy his death and resurrection. The death and resurrection of the son. Last week, Jesus asked the scribes, "What are you disputing with my disciples?" Today's passage has another dispute, and Jesus will ask, "What were you disputing on the road?" Last week, when the son looked dead, it says Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up. Likewise, in today's passage, Jesus will take hold of a little child, another son, and lift him up in his arms. As you study the scriptures, you start noticing parallels between stories. You see how themes are repeated from passage to passage. Even little things like these show the cohesion of the Bible and that there is a logic to its order. As Mark wrote his gospel, inspired by the Holy Spirit, he was intentional to use various literary structures. Well, in verse 30 of Mark 9, Jesus and the disciples started resuming their journey around Galilee. And while traveling, Jesus taught them about his crucifixion and resurrection. In verse 31, he said, "The Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of men, and they will kill him. And after he is killed, he will rise the third day." The disciples did not understand this, and it says they were afraid to ask him about it. The first time Jesus predicted his death, that's when Peter rebuked him, and Jesus said, "Get behind me, Satan." Might that be why they were afraid to ask any questions? Will Jesus rebuke us if we inquire? Will Jesus call us Satan? Let's play it safe and be quiet. But this was a puzzling statement to their ears. They couldn't foresee Jesus being betrayed and killed. That wasn't a part of their plan. Most people don't plan for their hero to be killed, do they? No. No one wants that to happen to their leader. What seems really bizarre is that after Jesus made the statement, it's as if they totally ignored it, disregarded it even. They started thinking about future victory and future prominence in the kingdom. Verse 34 says they were disputing among themselves who would be the greatest in the kingdom. Jesus waited to confront them about this until they arrived to a house in Capernaum. He asked them, "What were you disputing among yourselves?" But like earlier, the disciples stayed quiet. They didn't answer him. Maybe they knew Jesus wouldn't be too happy with them for what they were talking about. Maybe they knew deep down that they shouldn't have been arguing over something like that. But Jesus, of course, knew what they were disputing, and he turned it into a teaching point. Verse 35, "If anyone desires to be first, he shall be last of all and servant of all." That's a little backwards from how humans usually think, right? If you want to be first, you must be last. How does that make any sense? By itself, it might not make much sense. But then Jesus gave an illustration to explain it. Verse 36. Then he took a little child and set him in the midst of them. And when he had taken him in his arms, he said to them, "Whoever receives one of these little children in my name receives me. And whoever receives me receives not me, but him who sent me." Evidently, the house that they were at had a family there, and there were children around. And Jesus used a child in his illustration. In Greek, this word for child means infant or little one. Infant or little one. It does not mean a 10-year-old. It does not mean a 12-year-old. This was a toddler or younger, small enough for Jesus to pick up and hold. And I should add, later, down in verse 42, Jesus refers to the little ones as those who believe in him. Whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to stumble. You know the rest of that verse. In the Bible, covenant toddlers and infants are reckoned as believers, not just their parents. There is such a thing as pedo faith. There are other examples we could look to, but it's right here in Mark 9. So Jesus took the child in his arms, and he said, "Whoever receives one of these little ones in my name receives me. And if you receive me, you will receive the one who sent me," meaning God the Father. So what was the point? And how did it relate to the argument about who was going to be the greatest? When we think of greatness, we think of things like authority and power and notoriety. That's what the disciples were concerned about. They were focusing on their own glory, not the glory of Christ or the glory of others. But Jesus was showing them that their concerns were misplaced. Their priorities were all messed up. You want to be great? You want to be first? Then you have to be the last of all. You have to be a servant of all. That's what makes you great in my kingdom. It's not about power and notoriety. It's about service. Jesus had been saying that he himself would be murdered. The same Jesus who can cast out the strong demons, the same Jesus who has been healing sicknesses and raising the dead, all power and greatness belongs to him. And yet he would be killed. Jesus made himself a servant of all, to the point of death for all. If that was the path even for Jesus, then it would have to be the path for the disciples. They weren't greater than him, were they? No. The disciples had to become humble servants like Jesus was. Jesus was training them to be more like him. Being great requires sacrifice for the sake of others. That's how it was for Jesus, the disciples, and that's how it is for us. You won't be great in God's kingdom with pride, arrogance, and ego trips. You can't grasp for glory prematurely like Adam did in the garden. Be a servant and wait for God to glorify you. Wait for God to give you that glory as a gift. You will be great in the kingdom when you lay down your life in service to others. That was Jesus' main purpose on earth. That's what the crucifixion was about. The flashy and exciting ministry stuff, healing, casting out demons, that wouldn't last forever. That's not the test of greatness. The test is to view yourself lower than the low in order to serve others, to serve the smallest of society, to help the helpless. That's why Jesus used a child in his illustration. Children, by their very nature, are fully dependent on others. Infants are helpless. They need someone to do everything for them. They must be protected and nurtured and fed and changed and all the rest. That's how God created little children to be. That is a good thing. We start off weak and helpless in this life, but we grow, we develop, we mature, we become more independent as we get older. Jesus was saying to the disciples, you have to regard yourself as lower than this infant. You have to regard yourself as lower than this infant. Receive this child as greater than yourself, even though he is smaller and weaker. Receive him as greater. Love him and serve him. Take him into your arms. That is the work that makes you great in my kingdom. I mean, Jesus is showing them how to do this, right? As he's speaking about it. He took the child in his arms, right? The disciples and all Christian communities are to continue that work, to follow that example that Jesus set. Well, let's talk about some practical applications of this principle. First, it can apply to the care of children and their material needs. All throughout the Bible, we're told that God is the defender of the fatherless. James 1 says that pure religion is to visit orphans in their trouble. So quite literally, we are to care for the most vulnerable among us. And thanks be to God, Christians have been doing a good job of this throughout history. In the Roman Empire, things like abortion, infanticide, child abandonment were all common. Those were things that pagan worship promoted. It was the Christians who were rescuing the children and raising them and giving them support. And that is partly what caused Christianity to grow and thrive in that time period. In today's time, Christians still run orphanages, pregnancy crisis centers, other charitable organizations. And guess which group of people does the most fostering and adopting of children? The Christians. You can find statistics showing that Christians do those things more than any other group in the U.S. Mothers, you are perhaps the best picture of self-sacrifice for children. You carry them and nurture them in your body for 9 months. That's a sacrifice. You sacrifice your own body for your child. You don't sacrifice the child. That's evil. That's wicked. That's the way of the world. No, you sacrifice yourself. Your body is broken for your child. That's how you model Jesus for your children. Of course, fathers are self-sacrificial, but in different ways, right? Fathers break a sweat and break their backs in their vocations in order to give provision to the family. Fathers get home from work and spend time with the kids. They give attention to them, even though they would prefer to kick their feet up and do nothing. Both parents make sacrifices for the children. Second, we don't just care for the material needs of children, but for their spiritual needs as well. That care should be happening within the family unit, but it's also supposed to be happening within the church family. Parents have the primary responsibility of raising their children in the faith, but the church community has a responsibility to assist the parents with their children. Church officers have a duty to give spiritual care, not just to the adults, but to the children. Children in the church must not be ignored or treated as second class. They are to be treated as the baptized Christians that they are. They should be involved in the church's life and worship. At St. David's, this is why we have children with us in the worship service. And it's why they eat from the same table that we all do. Some churches don't serve the little ones. Some churches don't serve the little ones, and that's to their own detriment, because they are not receiving the children as greater than themselves. Third, Jesus' point was that the disciples should receive everyone this way, not just children. If you are to become a servant lower than a child, then that means you are lower than everybody. Lower than your fellow disciples. Lower than your fellow church members. Each of the 12 disciples should have viewed themselves as lower than the rest. If they had done that, there would have been no arguing over who was the greatest. At least not in the same way, right? They might be arguing about it, but in a different way. Like, no, dude, you're the best. You're the greatest. You're going to be the top dog. No, man, you are, right? Well, that's how we should be with each other. View others as greater than yourself. Serve them for their benefit, and you will be great in God's eyes. Children, kids, this is a command for you too. At any age, you must view others as greater than yourself. That's the basis for being obedient and respectful to those who are older than you. It's the basis for being kind and caring to those who are younger than you. Watch over the little kids. Watch over those who are younger than you. Be reliable. Be trustworthy in that task. Those are the qualities of a faithful servant. Contrary to popular opinion, we do not live in a survival of the fittest world. That's what the evolutionists and the atheists think. That's what our sinful desires want. We want to get ahead and we want to step on people to do so. But the true world, which is God's world, the true world is a world of sacrifice. Sacrifice is the key to success. Sacrifice is the key. Jesus told the disciples to receive the child. That's what Jesus did. He demonstrated that by taking the child in his arms. Jesus, our great King, regarded us as greater than himself. He laid down his life so that we might receive him and receive the Father. That humble sacrifice resulted in what? Glory and exaltation to Jesus. He was raised to an immortal body and then ascended into heaven to rule and reign as King over the nations. To receive a child as greater than yourself, you must regard everyone as greater than yourself, including Jesus. After all, Jesus was once a child. He was the promised child, the miracle child, the greatest child. and He came to be your Savior. Receive Him and serve Him, and you will be great in His kingdom.